When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Getting jiggy with it, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus Speller and Luke Moore's here.
All right.
And Jimmy Jiggy Campbell.
Hello.
Na 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 na,
getting Jimmy with it.
Na 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 na,
getting finger with it.
Breaking news!
I thought it was breaking news on Friday.
Happened again.
A weekend's football's happened.
Arsene Wenger, eh? Big Veng will leave Arsenal at the end of the season after 300 years in charge.
Yeah.
Or 22 years in the modern calendar. Yes, the news broke, of course, in Ramble fashion, classic Ramble fashion, the morning after we recorded Thursday's show. As I said to everybody, the big story this season was, of course, Pardew leaving West Brom, and that one came in at the right time.
Yes,
okay. You can't have it all.
You can't lose in the Ramble, though, because either you get to go have it straight away and you get to put it out there, a la Pardew, or, like happened with Wenger, you get a good run-up at it.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the highlights of the whole situation, because it was a very, very surreal thing, especially as an Arsenal fan, was that so many people were making the joke about Alan Pardew taking over that he was trending.
Wow. Like,
which is really something, isn't it?
I bet he was absolutely loving it as well. The people have spoken.
Completely missing the point.
Pardew didn't realise it was a joke, did he?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Pardew doesn't realise anything's a joke unless he said the joke.
Yes.
And then sometimes even then he doesn't. But Jim, as an Arsenal fan of your life's standing, how did you feel when you saw the news? Did you see it coming? What was your initial sort of feeling about it?
It did feel very, very sudden. When it happened, I was just at home, obviously. It's one of those things. I remember it.
Let me just jump in there because I understand it seems quite sudden.
Yeah.
Yet for years, so many people have been calling for his head. It's a funny one.
That's the strangest thing about the whole thing. It felt very sudden, just because I got a message from a friend of mine that was just a confused faced emoji, and I was like, all right, okay. So I just looked at the news. I was like, oh my god, it's finally happening. Mm. And as I've said many times on the show, it is going to be like getting a new dad when someone steps in, and it feels very emotional because I was at school when he took over. You know, I've not known my football club to change manager as an adult. adult, which is very, very rare and unusual thing. I don't know what that process really feels like. So it's a very, very strange feeling.
Would you say the feeling was the same when you found out that the Cuban presidency had changed to not a Castro in charge? Because that's all we've known.
That was the first thing I thought of, yeah.
Jim, and one of the things that's come out that I've noticed, and something that a sort of myth, I suppose, that I want to dispel, is that I don't want to speak on behalf of Arsenal fans, but just because on balance people have thought that it would be better if Wenger was no longer the manager of the club. Now, I understand loads of people have disgraced themselves and been disrespectful and all the rest of it. Most normal people aren't like that. But just because most normal Arsenal fans have now decided that the club would be better without Wenger, it doesn't mean you can't be sad that he's leaving.
Oh, of course.
And this very idea that, of course, Arsenal fans are all of a sudden really hypocritical because they're now really lamenting his leaving, is they're not mutually exclusive.
Absolutely. Also, you can't paint every fan of any club with a single brush on any issue. I mean, some of the people that have been shouting the loudest for Wenger's head, they've been very interesting to sort of, you know, hunt them out on Twitter and see what they're saying now. I've seen some people being fairly disingenuous, claiming, "Oh, I've always been, you know, always been supportive when he's done the right things and blah blah blah." It's like, yeah, but you've been screaming really loudly and being a bit of a baby about it a lot of the time. But you know, we're not here to talk about those people because they're a footnote in what is an incredible career, the likes of which we are unlikely to see again. I have so many incredible memories from that man, and I have to say, despite all the frustrations, despite the fact that we've said so many times, you know, you can say the same thing over and over and over again about Arsenal over the years, and it's hard to have anything left to say. It's all absolutely worth it for the joy that he's brought me as a fan. Like watching that unbeaten team and the team in 1998 as well. I mean, they could be the best teams Arsenal ever have, and I got to enjoy those in my youth, and that's a really special thing that I feel very lucky to have witnessed.
And of course, younger fans may have not witnessed that, but he still did have those achievements under his belt.
Yeah.
Do you think they were right to keep him on until the end of the season?
Sorry, Arsenal, you've taken as far as you can. Imagine that. I, do you know, as an outsider looking in, Arsenal, it's a testament to the job Wenger's done, actually, because Arsenal are now a club that it's impossible to not have an opinion on, especially if you work doing what we do. And so they're never out of the headlines for whatever reason. And of course, a rich, illustrious history and a huge club. And he would be, you know, you wouldn't be outrageous to say that he's been their most important and greatest manager ever. I understand the Herbert Chapman thing as well, and he would be up there too, of course, based on my understanding of it. But in terms of the modern era, the way that he shepherded them through into this new, into the new era of football, and shepherded them into a new stadium and all the rest of it, and I mean, just an astonishing career, and not only one that has changed Arsenal beyond recognition, but actually one that's changed English football.
Absolutely.
Beyond. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine what English football would be like had Wenger not come in and taken the Arsenal job. Now, I understand that, you know, football, you know, the world is a much smaller place now and things are influenced across different borders and different continents, of course. But when you're talking about the history of English club football, Wenger's name will be writ large for the rest of time, really, because of the way he's changed exactly how the game is played and how players think about nutrition, about training. I mean, the guy was an absolute revolutionary when he came in.
Absolutely, and everyone started copying it effectively, and that sort of helped bring things up to speed. It's mad to think that the man everyone thought was going to replace Bruce Rick was Johan Cruyff. It's that long ago, really sort of dates it, doesn't it? But yeah, I mean, Arsenal's status as a club now is far more down to him than I think a lot of people, particularly the younger people, would realise. Because, you know, obviously they didn't qualify for the Champions League last season, but to qualify for as many years as they did and then move into this huge new state-of-the-art stadium, Arsenal weren't necessarily a club that were going to do that. Mm. You know, they've always been a big name in English football, but they weren't, you know, they weren't the huge sort of global brand that they are now. It's horrible to use that word, but that is kind of how modern football works. And Wenger so much of their status now is down to him. And yeah, it's sad to see him go. It is the right thing for the club and possibly for him. We'll see what he does next. I don't know if he'll retire. He says he doesn't feel tired or fatigued by it, so he might move on somewhere else. I'd be surprised if that was here, but who knows?
The four big club stories in the Premier League since we've been doing the show have been Chelsea under Abramovich, Manchester City under the Abu Dhabi Investment Group, and on the other side of the coin, we've had Ferguson's United and Wenger's Arsenal. Now, with the exception of Ferguson's United, and that is a big exception, and he built a dynasty over many, many years as well. I wonder, we're probably never going to see that happening again. So any success story we talk about now in the way modern football works is going to be much more likely to be related around an oligarch coming in, a big money man coming in, and the club turning over managers fairly quickly, but also, you know, having sustained success using that model rather than the sort of build from the ground up. Because, you know, Wenger won the Premier League in what, his second full season in charge. You wonder whether managers will be given that chance these days. I mean, they might be, because 2 years is quite a quick, impactful success, but I guess it depends on the club. The sad thing is...
Guardiola's managed it.
He has managed it, he has. But the sad thing is we're not really probably going to see a manager of that like again in the Premier League, because even, say, Eddie Howe, who's come up through the leagues with Bournemouth, there's a clear ceiling there for a team like Bournemouth in terms of sustained success. Even though they managed to fluke a Leicester City and win it as a one-off, you're not going to get a dynasty, you're not going to get an era like that. So in many ways, Wenger represents a dying generation, a generation that we won't see again. And that's a reason to be quite sad about it as well.
Definitely.
Jeff Shreves was typically respectful in his post-match interview after the West Ham game. It was like he was really, really trying to get something out of it. It was properly like, Arsene, so after the end of such a long reign, are you concerned about the creeping spectre of death? Give the man a moment.
That's quite a nice impression of old Shreves.
It's not one you want, though, is it?
No, it's not. You can't have that in your locker. I don't know why you brought Shreves to the table, Jeff.
I just felt I had to get that off of my chest. But I was watching that like, Jeff, shut up, Jeff.
And that's absolutely right. And I think you know, like we all are really, compared to such a great man in the game, we're carrying, aren't we? Picking up, we're vultures picking on the carrying.
Wouldn't call Jeffrey's a great man in the game.
No,
you know, I know.
But, and this is a time to be positive and reflect on what Wenger achieved. And of course, I'm sure we'll do a profile in due course about him and all that kind of stuff, because that's what he deserves. And that'll be a real feather in his cap, I think.
Yeah, indeed, a profile for the Ramble. Been leading up to.
But just a word of warning. I read earlier today, and I also heard Gary Neville say it, that Arsenal don't currently have a transition plan in place. Now, that cannot be true, can it?
You would hope not, but we've seen that Arsenal have gone from being a club that everybody sort of respected as the way to run a club to being a little bit more chaotic. You can see that with the transfer policies in the past and how they've been a little bit kind of, well, very, very slapdash. So I hope not, but I think it's such that the situation's so delicate that when you're in the club and Arsene Wenger has been in charge for so long and the situation is as it is, the idea of planning for his succession under his nose is probably a little bit difficult. It might be that, you know...
They'll have people in mind.
No, there'll certainly be people in mind, but it might be that Wenger's only comes to this decision now. He had that two-year contract. You know, we know that he was a very proud man, or is a very proud man, that thinks he can keep doing a job. So it could just be that, you know, this has been sprung on the board now. They're expecting him to do another year. Who knows? But they've got to get one together quickly. There's lots of names linked. Allegri and Ancelotti. The Rodgers one won't go away, though I would very much like it to.
I don't just to be clear, I don't just mean who the next manager is going to be. I mean, a seismic change in the running of the club needs to be prepared for, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I'd love Wenger and Arsenal to win the Europa League. And
I would as well.
I would have loved that even before.
Because it's a type of trophy that's eluded him.
Exactly. Mm. And I would have loved it if they do win it. Oh, it's such a shame you go and you brought us a trophy. Yeah. All right, I'll stay on for another couple of years.
Could happen.
That's what we want. That would be wonderful. Yeah. There we are.
Diego Simeone turns up the first day of pre-season. Wenger's just in the chair. What are you doing here? You're a couple of years early.
There's been a change of plan and style of football as well. Gentlemen, the FA Cup, a trophy that Wenger knows very well. He's not going to win it this time. Mourinho might. Mourinho rides again. My goodness, that man, he just pulls it out the bag, doesn't he? One minute we're saying, yeah, they've beaten Manchester City. Maybe next season they might have...
So predictable they did this.
Yeah, and then they lose to West Brom. You think, oh, blimey.
They even go a goal down.
It's incredible, really. If you know, they have had a good season, I suppose, and the disappointing thing has been a few sloppy results.
Yeah,
going out in the Champions League in quite weak fashion, and perhaps not playing the most exciting brand of football. But they're in the FA Cup, and it was a brilliant win against Spurs. They were much better, but he had Sanchez was on song. You know, Pogba was playing well, linked brilliantly for the goal.
Another assist for Pogba. We talked about him on Thursday,
and what a beauty it was. Yeah. But they started the game. Spurs straight out the traps, 1-0, you know, with that crowd, and yet Manchester United, they win.
Well, they soak it up, don't they? Jose Mourinho is very good at getting his teams to disregard an atmosphere, particularly if their atmosphere is going against them, because they just stand up tall the whole game, don't they? Yep. I don't think you're just not going to see a Mourinho team get intimidated by a packed crowd. You know, it just doesn't, it rarely happens. I can't think of any examples
of it. He relishes that, which makes me think, actually. Has it kind of With Manchester City winning the league in the way they did, does that play into his hands, if you know what I mean? Give me a little bit of wiggle room here. Because next season, Manchester City will be the favourites. Yeah. Overwhelming favourites. It's all about them. And he loves nothing more than to go, oh, right. Yeah. So we're the underdogs, are we? Yeah. We're the unfashionable side. Well, we'll show you. And his Real Madrid side showed Guardiola's Barcelona that season when I think it was a record points tally they won La Liga in between Barcelona with that one of the best sides of all time.
Yeah.
But concentrating on this game, again, Spurs would have perhaps been slight favourites for some people with that playing at Wembley. Not sure, you know.
I think they would be. I think, you know, clearly the situation is slightly different because the allocation to fans and tickets and all the rest of it, you know, we've all been to Wembley at semi-finals. There's, you know, one side of the stadium is one set of fans. Mm-hmm. You know, it will be different to an extent. But Spurs play at that stadium every other week. They've settled into that location pretty well. As I said to you before, I was at the game when they played them in the league, and Spurs were 100 times better. I mean, United weren't even at it. It was one of the poorest United performances I've ever seen in the flesh. They were really so poor, and Spurs were so good. And you see Ali get the early goal, which is similar to what happened in the league game. Spurs scored much earlier, but they did score first. And after that, you thought, well, it's going to be like the league game all over again. But then United start to push. And I felt, actually, that Spurs, for a reason I can't quite put my finger on, Spurs almost allowed United to come back into the game.
I know what you mean.
They let them push their way back in. They let Pogba have time on the ball. Pogba stepped up and was counted, and that assist was fantastic. And we talked about his
great number. Header from Sanchez.
It was, and he's got a great record in FA Cup games, as Jim will
love
know.
Scoring against Spurs.
Something like five FA Cup games at Wembley, he scored in all of them,
yeah,
which is right. An incredible record.
Scored there for Chile as well.
So Spurs must know all this stuff. And then, you know, something else that was quite uncharacteristic is that, you know, Pogba steals the ball from Dembele in quite a dangerous area.
He muscles him off of it as well.
Dembele's a strong player.
People, I mean, I've seen, you know, not just on this show, I've seen players say, and ex-players say, Dembele is one of the most underrated midfielders in Europe.
Mm, yeah.
He's so hard to get the ball off. He'll glide past you. You don't know where he's going. It was really unlike him to lose the ball like that from what I've seen. Spurs fans may disagree. They may see him a lot more often and go, you know, he does that a lot more. I don't know. But from what I've seen, he's so good on the ball. Mm. And then not only that, guys, but the who's tracking the Herrera run for the winner?
Yeah.
They're jogging back and Herrera's in there. And it's a great finish. And it's Spurs supporting friend of mine who was at the game. He goes to all their games, knows his stuff. He's been a season ticket holder for a long time. I used to work for him. And he said, Luke, to me, it felt like we knew how to play, but Mourinho's United knew how to win.
Absolutely.
And that's the difference.
Absolutely. It certainly feels like that, doesn't it? A little, I think as well, when you come up against that sort of team, especially when they get back in the game, like United can fatigue you. You know, or Mourinho teams can fatigue you because it does become this brick wall. And it's almost a brick wall that you can push up and down the pitch. And Pogba was superb as the sort of, you know, focal point of that. And he and Sanchez are actually really developing what looks like a quite promising partnership for the future. I mean, Sanchez has spluttered a little bit. It's taken him a little while to get going. But you've seen those two spark into life quite a bit. And that's going to be a huge, huge boon for them next season.
Yeah, especially given that I haven't seen as much of that as you clearly have, Jim. But I'm not denying that's true. But it's interesting. A few months ago, we were talking about how can Mourinho get them both in the team effectively. So if he is starting to do that, that's great. But just something we probably should mention is that Mourinho, despite being at the top of the game for such a long time, based on that game, he's still learning, he's still adapting. I mean, you guarantee he'd have had the tape of that league game out and would have been watching it. How can we target him here and there, you know? And, you know, as Jim said, he's the king of sort of making it happen.
But that kind of winning mentality, what you're talking about, the Spurs winning mentality was in question after the game. Dele Alli was gutted.
He was absolutely gutted
in that post-match interview, and he said that they shouldn't have thrown it away. 1-0 up, he went, the crowd are like that, and so on. He was shaking his head going, how have we lost? And Pochettino said there's still a lot of work to do, whether it's with himself or another manager, which is not the kind of word Spurs fans want to hear. Whether
you can, from him.
Yeah, but whether you mean you can look into that as much or as little
it's second language stuff. I mean, it's
you can look into as much or as little as possible. Time will tell. But he did say, you know, that again, that breeding that winning mentality. Whereas Mourinho himself said, when I don't win, you kill me, because I almost do that all of the time. When I don't do it, you kill me, which is what you were all ready to do.
I think that's right.
It is right, but we have to be careful because this season we've been dragged one way and then back the other on Mourinho.
All I've really said by and large is the fact that it's just dull. It's just terrible to watch. It's like you can't hard to get excited about it. And, you know, I think he's right to an extent at what he's saying there, but if they are going to come second Man United, because of what's come before, we are within our rights, and people are within their rights to say, well, that's not good enough for Man United. And that's some of the criticism he's received. But just briefly on the Spurs thing and about Dele Alli being gutted, I saw that as well. And it's we can't gloss over what Pochettino's achieved at Spurs. I mean, before Pochettino came along, Spurs were known for being a type of team, this Spursy thing that comes along. But Pochettino has really sort of almost eradicated that. And I say almost because clearly there's still a bit of a way to go. But people were saying, and we were probably been the same on this show, can they sustain a Champions League team? Well, they're going to finish in the top four this season again. They're going to be in the Champions League again. They've had signature wins in the Champions League this season against teams like Real Madrid, against Dortmund. They were unlucky not to beat Juventus. So they are stepping up and they're getting better.
And they have played at a stadium which is not their own as well.
They're transitioning into a new stadium, something we mentioned about with Wenger and Arsenal earlier. Not easy to do. Wenger did a great job with that as well at the Emirates. Took them some more time to win something after they did it, but they did it. But the final thing is, that's the eighth FA Cup semi-final in a row that Spurs have lost. So there are still some aspects. As Jonathan Wilson said in The Guardian this weekend, there are still some bits and pieces, and there's still work to do. And that's why Pochettino is saying that.
Absolutely. Yeah. They'll be playing Chelsea in the final. Will Manchester United narrative, Jim? Oh, narrative.
All over it.
Come on.
Get ready for some mind games towards Antonio Conte. basically from now on. Conte will be looking at that thinking, oh God, he's going to be on me all like for a month.
Conte will be looking at that, oh, I've got to do an extra game before I leave.
Yeah.
Actually, the thing, as we've said before, I love this particular ding-dong between Mourinho and Conte, because Conte absolutely rises to it every single time, but just sort of quite enjoys that.
I was going to say, he wants to rise to it.
He's like a constantly erupting volcano. It just depends where he splatters his lava, doesn't it?
He's an absolute nutter, but he would have been in love with that Giroud goal, wouldn't he?
It was beautiful. How I miss him. This is Giroud against Sanchez for me at Wembley. This is how I'm getting involved in that.
Who
are you cheering for?
Giroud.
Okay, right.
And it pains me to say that for obvious reasons, but you know.
It was a great goal, and Giroud is... He earned it. I mean, he had a start in place, didn't he? And he earned it. Yeah. I mean, he's been playing well. He's been scoring when he's been called upon. I don't know who they'll go with for the final itself, but Morata came on and scored as well. It's a great goal from Giroud. Great quick feet in a key area. So Southampton had a couple of sort of key moments. One was the Shane Long chance. I mean, Shane Long's first touch is a thing of absolute beauty.
In a sense.
Yeah.
Well, beauty isn't the eye of the beholder, of course.
Well, it's the only player I've ever seen at that level where the ball comes to him at pace and it hits him, and before you know it, it's out of camera shot.
It's like
a pinball machine.
Yeah.
How is that even possible?
It was like a stick of dynamite, and I don't mean that like the compliment it might sound It's absolutely incredible, because Charlie Austin did so well to dummy that. That was if you're breaking down a tight defence, that sort of play is brilliant.
It was such a
great bit of thinking, and then Long has just wasted it completely.
Well, their key moments were that, and then was it Austin or Gabbiadini who hit the post?
Austin.
Hit the post.
Well, Gabbiadini might have put it in, although it's easier said than done, and of course he probably thought it was going in itself, but that was at 2-0. But yeah, I mean Shane Long, he's caught in two minds, isn't he?
Yeah, but it was right after Chelsea scored their second. If they get it back to 2-1 and there's 10 minutes left, you know, stranger things have happened. It's a cup semi-final, you know.
True. And then there was the moment, of course, when Willy Caballero dropped the ball.
I don't know how he saved that.
It was a strange... I mean, I'm not sure. Was it a foul? Probably
not. You mean the actual coming together?
Oh, well, there was that one. The save he made was incredible. It was like he'd messed it up, but his trailing arm was ready.
It hit the inside of his left hand and went behind him, but didn't go in the goal. And the one you're talking about, I didn't think that was a foul.
No, I didn't think it was a foul. Was it a handball? I mean, what was it? Did it even go in? The fact of the matter is it was given as a free kick, and Southampton were a little bit hard done by. Southampton played well, but Chelsea's class just
came through. They did play well, but only in very small bursts. And I wonder what this does to their morale now, because they've been so like pretty badly outplayed there. And, you know, that's not great.
We'll come on to that. I mean, the only thing you could say that, Jim, is that no one really expected them to win that game.
I suppose for me, if they were in the tie late doors, which they were, then...
Yeah.
I get that no one expects them to, you know, to be in the tie, but if you then go to the tie and get an absolute lesson, you know, it's not necessarily great.
From my point of view, I wanted to... I like it when there's a...
Southampton loss?
and I'll come on to that. But I like it when there's like a non-traditional big team in the cup final.
Of course.
But that team would have been Southampton, so I'm fairly happy with what came to pass. Because I didn't want to get into a situation where they got relegated, but we won the FA Cup. Because I can't have that. I cannot have that.
Why can't you have that?
I don't want them to have a trophy.
Yeah.
Nah.
You want the last team on the South Coast to have won the FA Cup, be Portsmouth, obviously.
But all joking aside, one of the things that... Southampton are a Premier League team at time of recording. they are. But one of the things that Portsmouth has got over Southampton, has had over them for years and years, is they've won more trophies. So I don't need Southampton to be winning more trophies.
I don't think Southampton have ever won the top flight, have they?
Don't think so, no.
But Portsmouth have?
Yes, twice.
Twice?
Yeah.
Late 50s?
Yeah, we haven't got time for that.
Let's do a profile on it.
Download my own special podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's out every day.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. But yeah, Conte versus Mourinho. A nice bit of narrative. I know that it's two sides who have won a lot of trophies and so on. But for the neutral, let's just at least enjoy that because we've got that to look forward to, as you say, a lot of nonsense and whatnot. Although it's just as well Pete's not here because he would just be moaning about more Mourinho quotes and so on and so forth.
He'd be loving the Sunderland stuff, wouldn't he?
Well, again, we maybe he'll turn up for it.
I'll call him later. See what he says.
Apparently he's in Denver.
Yeah.
Things to do in Denver when you're Donny.
Denver, the last Donny saw.
I think it's time for a break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back after this.
You get one of them nice, big, juicy worms hanging out your mouth just on the edge there.
Ooh, hey.
Tasty.
Very, very tasty. It's now time for correspondence with Jimmy C.
Yeah, I'm going to start off with a quick one. This is from Mark Gelbert. He says, I did get Sheila Vera as the answer to going for gold last week, but only because Sam Blakely emailed me the answer in advance. So that's
How is that even possible?
our worst listener.
The guy is emailing everyone he knows, including all the key contestants in going for Grintles.
Going for Grintles.
Okay, so we've got another one here. This has been doing the rounds on Twitter a little bit as well. Hi, gents. Just wanted to throw a quick highlight of the week for my mate, low light for me. Had my stag do this weekend in Edinburgh, and the best men had arranged for a lovely trip to the Ainslie Park Stadium for the Edinburgh City versus Clyde game.
Oh, you used to play five-a-side then.
Did you really? After a quick, embarrassing quiz in the morning in which my future wife revealed my enormously embarrassing nickname of Snuggle Monster, we arrived at the ground. On arrival, I was quickly stripped of my pride, dignity and clothes, and thrown into a full Edinburgh City kit complete with Snuggle Monster emblazoned on the back.
Very good.
I had to lead out the teams hand in hand with former Scotland international Craig Beattie, who was absolutely loving it. What makes it worse was the fact I'm 6'5" and it was family day at the ground, so all the other players' children were also mascots and following in behind. Classic big man, little man combination. Sadly, I was far from a good luck charm as Clyde ran out comfortable 3-1 winners. Loving the show. Cheers, Mike/Snuggle Monster.
That's so very good, that.
Yeah. Great. It's got incredible work gone into that.
Stag weekends are the scourge, aren't they? I mean, I was in Munich last weekend, and there's quite a few stag weekends around.
They're horrible.
Oh, God. But if you're going to do something like that, then I approve. Yeah, and Snuggle Monster, work. You are officially a friend of the Ramble for that.
Damn
so there
right.
you go.
Damn right.
Hi, all.
Hello.
So I was thinking about Marcus's tip for West Brom to get Champions League last season, and I wondered whether the Ramble curse has directly contributed to their painful Pardew-filled demise. So the show in which Marcus tipped them for Champions League qualification was the preview show from the 3rd of the 3rd, 2017, before which West Brom had a respectable run in the season, with 11 wins, 7 draws and 9 losses, putting them a giddy 8th place with 40 points. Since that show, they have won a mere 5 times in the league,
endured
half a season of Alan Pardew, and currently sit rock bottom of the Premier League table. The Ramble curse exists.
Hang on a minute, Jim. I don't know about you, but I feel that's a Marcus curse, not a Ramble curse.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Well,
and also, I didn't tip them for Champions League. I jokingly suggested that look how close they are to fourth spot, I think.
Well, if they stuck with Pulis, they might be there now.
Yeah, exactly.
You lie down with Pardew, you get fleas.
Good point against Liverpool, though.
It was fantastic.
Since Pardew's gone, they've beaten Manchester United, Old Trafford, and drawn with Liverpool.
Yeah.
I want to get rid of him last... Oh, bollocks, get on with it,
Pete, please continue to be pessimistic and dour about Newcastle. We definitely do not need a Ramble curse right now. Cheers, Jake Young.
Nice one for that, Jake. It's a Marcus curse, not a Ramble curse. We've established that.
I mean, we've cursed enough stuff ourselves, haven't we? But I think you have to bear the brunt of that one, mate.
I think when you what some of our listeners are singularly failing to realise is we talk about lots of different football clubs all the time, and some of those will occasionally do quite badly.
And by the way, if you actually thought I tipped West Brom for Champions League qualification,
well, you did. The thing is, Marcus, I think that, and I know Jim does as well. So we're with the listeners on that.
We can read the glint in your eye.
Up all of yours.
Is that all, Jim? Or have you got one more?
Oh, one more.
Okay,
one more from Rob O'Rourke. Hello, Ramblers.
Robbo.
Like your listener from last week, I was also at Ireland v Denmark in 2002. However, being a lot older at 12 years of age, I remember it a bit better. The stadium announcer, obviously feeling a bit guilty for landing non-former Rangers player Peter Madsen in it, came back on over the tannoy after 10 minutes of booing to announce, "We would like to encourage fans to show the usual friendly Lansdowne Road welcome to all players." This resulted in loud cheers every time Peter Madsen and the rest of the Danish team received the ball, and a chorus of loud boos and whistles every time an Irish player touched the ball. If I remember correctly, even Clint Morrison's 90th minute goal was received with boos from the home crowd.
Tell you what, when you go and watch Ireland play, you really have got to make your own entertainment.
Apparently so. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Well, listen, show at thefootballramble.com if you want to get involved with more of that nonsense. Whenever Pete's back, he'll be reading your emails. But whenever he's not here, Jim will be doing it and actually probably reading ones that are good rather than the most recent ones that come into the inbox. And yes, that is a dig, Donny.
There we are, ladies and gentlemen, back into the Premier League. And let's go to some individual awards as it's that time of year. Mo Salah, crowned PFA Player of the Year. Deserved. Unless you're a Kevin De Bruyne fan.
Who saw that coming?
Yeah. Well, it was him, between him and Kevin De Bruyne.
And I suppose the thing that made it perhaps a tiny, tiny bit of a surprise is the fact that, as we talked about last week, this is voted on at a quite odd time of the season. And Salah, as he hit the ground running, but he's improved and improved and improved. Yeah. And now it's like almost like a groundswell of opinion that he's been the best player in the Premier League, whereas maybe perhaps a few months ago people were saying it's between those two.
Yeah.
For what it's worth, regular listeners to this show will know that I don't really care too much about individual awards in football, but if I had to be pushed, I would say I agree with that decision.
And shocking music. Sorry to
was it?
Cut in there.
I didn't
the
see
music
it.
For when the award is given. It's just
what was it?
Just this weird sort of embarrassing trumpet thing. It just all looks a little
is
bit...
Is it really? I didn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't really... Oh, fair enough, Jim. Well, we'll look into that for next year. Leroy Sané, of course, won Young Player of the Season.
And I think deservedly so.
Can't argue too much. With that, back to the team game, though. Stoke needed a win. They didn't get that win.
Stoke needed a win. It's like you're going to break into song. Stoke needed a win. But Stoke they didn't get that one.
And Mo Salah is now player of the... Was that the music, Jim?
Yeah, that was it. What a bizarre subject for a musical. Stoke City.
Diouf had a chance at 1-0 to make it 2-0, of course, didn't take it. Stephen Ireland hit the outside of the post. Stephen Ireland, ladies and gentlemen, lovely to see him.
Still fine.
I feel like this in itself has become a regular thing.
Yeah.
Like remembering Stephen Ireland.
Mm. Mo Salah has scored more Premier League goals than the whole of West Brom and only one fewer than Stoke.
Mm.
So there's your link.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's the curse again.
They were very close to it, weren't they?
I tell you what,
Ashley Barnes popped up, as talked about on the show last week.
As per.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barnes is in a rich vein of a scoring vein at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah.
Relatively speaking. But yeah, Stoke, you do worry for them now. Liverpool away next, Palace at home, then Swansea away. We said they have to go into that Swansea game needing something.
I think they're down. I mean, they've got 29 points. They play fewer games. They've got fewer games left than the other two.
Yeah.
Because really, I mean, are we talking about it being a straight shootout between Stoke, Southampton, and Swansea?
Yeah.
And one of them can survive realistically.
Yeah.
And
Swansea, of course, are favourites.
Stoke are in big trouble though.
They're in huge trouble. It was a good weekend, despite obviously losing. But in the context of the league for Southampton, because Stoke didn't win. And Swansea got battered, which helps the goal difference thing.
Yeah, that's
for Southampton. I mean, Stoke's goal difference is shocking, so it didn't really make too much difference. But Swansea have got Chelsea at home next, and then Southampton have got Bournemouth at home next. Now, that is a big weekend for both of those sides, because if Southampton win and Swansea lose, say, then it's on. It really is on. And then Swansea go away to Bournemouth, Southampton away to Everton, and then, of course, they play each other.
You'd rather be in Swansea's position because
you take the points all day long. But what I'm saying is Southampton do have a little bit of a chance, though.
Yeah, I mean, Bournemouth and Everton are exactly the type of teams you want to be playing at the moment because they've got far less, you know, riding on the outcome.
Of course.
Man City is a nightmare. But there you go. I think, you look at those Stoke fixtures, playing Palace and Swansea, two teams that really need to specifically beat you. That is a tough ask, isn't it?
I know, yeah. So it's going to be interesting down the bottom of the Premier League. Into the Championship, we know, of course, that Wolves are going to be playing Premier League football next season, but they secured the title with a 4-0 win against Bolton. Lovely old job.
Yeah. Bolton are terrible, aren't they?
They really are, yeah. What about Sunderland, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
They even found out the most humiliating way to do it as well.
It's fascinating.
I mean, how humiliating is it? I think that Jonathan Wilson wrote an article this weekend about Sunderland, and it's very good. Do seek that out. And he said in 2017, they held the lead at home in home matches in that calendar year for an accumulative total of 20 minutes.
That's mad. It's absolutely mad. They're in a terrible state. I work with Mickey Gray quite regularly. He's obviously a legend at the club, and he's absolutely gutted about what's going on there, of course. Ellis Short doesn't really seem to give a shit.
He's trying to sell, isn't he?
He wants the club to be taken over, and he said you can have it for free, but you have to take on the debt. God. And that's the problem.
Hmm.
On the game itself.
And against fellow strugglers Burton Albion, 1-0 up, Burton score, what, 86 and 93rd?
Yeah.
Something like that. Darren Bent, their former player.
Yeah, and really, really gave it some as well.
Well, because he was getting booed the whole game, so he gave it some, as you say.
Well, he looked like he'd eaten Darren Bent.
And then, of course, as you said earlier, Luke, after the match, Sunderland find out in the dressing room they've been relegated. The whole thing, from top to bottom.
And also, there's the added strange situation of the man wearing the man who scored the winner wearing a sports bra. Yeah, just odd.
That was weird, wasn't it?
It must be some muscle thing.
It's not, no, it's not. It's to do with it's a lot of players wear it. It's got a GPS in the back.
Right.
So it shows they can pick up different details about their performance, their distance covered, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And their heart rate.
Still, in the context, it looked like a sports bra.
Essentially, it is a sports bra, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, just because I saw extended highlights of the game. I mean, Burton pushed and to me, I have got sympathy for Sunderland fans for obvious reasons, but in terms of the players on the pitch, it's hard to have any sympathy for them because Burton knew they had to win this game, right? They've got Bolton at home next. If they win that, they leapfrog them. So Burton are giving themselves a decent chance of staying in the division.
They needed to win it.
Sunderland were a goal up. Their fans are booing Darren Bent. I understand why. He used to play for him and all the rest of it, and I'm sure there's a lot that went on that I can't immediately remember at the moment. But he used that as fuel, you know, and he pops up and scores. It's fine to boo a player, but it might come back to bite you on the arse at some point.
And it certainly did. And you talked about your sympathy. Well, Nigel Clough, Burton manager, born in Sunderland, of course, said, "I have unbelievable sympathy for Sunderland."
Well, they're a big club and they've been running to the ground. I mean, we've seen it happen time and time again in football. League One's a tough division. I mean, as Portsmouth have found out to their chagrin more recently. So it's going to be tough for them to bounce back as well.
Just as well Pete's not here. Otherwise, Sunderland fans might be too depressed to
carry
on listening.
Yeah. Actually, might put that in the synopsis for Sunderland fans who still tune in. Don't worry, the Geordie guy's not on it.
A little mention for the pleasing scoreline that happened with Bristol City and Hull City. 5-5. 5-5.
Yeah. I didn't see this, but it looked like it was an absolute cracker.
No, it was marvellous. Bristol City equalised in the 94th minute after going from 4-2 up to 5-4 down. But just seeing 5-5 in the classified results.
That's so good for football because you come away from that, being 5-4 down the 94th minute, think, well, we've got a point there. And you'll forget the fact that you were 4-2 up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Brilliant stuff. Into League One. Wigan will be back in the Championship next season after beating Fleetwood Town 4-0. Joey Barton watching on will be Fleetwood Town manager next season, unless, of course, he has a fight with everybody during the summer and then they think otherwise.
Could happen.
Could very much happen. Wigan have had a great season. Good cup run, some big scalps. Mm. And they've gone back up into the Championship, which is where they'll feel that they belong. Not long ago, of course, playing in the Premier League, so very much well done to them. But Charlton beat Portsmouth to give their playoff chances a boost. But Dent Pompey's, Luke.
But it's over for Portsmouth now. I mean, just quickly on Wigan. Wigan have been the best team in the division, in my opinion, so good luck to them. But Portsmouth, I mean, they lost at home to Charlton, the team around them that they had to beat, really. And the upshot is the last four games at a key time in the season, having played their way into the playoff picture, I think they've picked up 2 points in four games. So, you can't really do that.
No.
From what I saw in the game at Charlton at home, they look nervous to me, Portsmouth. They should dominate the ball more. I don't know why they don't. And they came up short. I mean, the home form hasn't been good enough overall. You guys who probably don't pay that much attention to Portsmouth, you would know that they're a team who very much relies on their home form. It's a good atmosphere down there. It's important for them to play well at home. And they went for a period of time, I haven't got the figures in front of me, but they went for a period of time, I think from New Year's Day or something to about 2 weeks ago or three, they hadn't won a game at home. So they don't deserve to be in there is the upshot. And that was a key game. If they had won that, it was on, but they come up short.
It's a shame. I wanted you to have a day out of Wembley, maybe in the playoff.
I've had many of those as a Pompey fan, mate, so it's okay.
But it gets further and further away, though.
It does.
That's what time
does. Disappearing in the rearview mirror. It is. You're absolutely right. But look, you have to remember, though, I've been quite critical of them there. They were promoted last season, so I mean, they've done very well to stay in there and to get amongst it. And they'll be among the favourites, I would have thought, to be in the top six.
Are you pleased, though, that Paul Cook will be back in the Championship next season?
I couldn't give a shit. What's
wrong with a cookie monster?
Nothing wrong with him, but I don't think he liked Portsmouth very much.
No.
Yeah, so...
But you don't have to go to his level. You still like him, can't you?
I think if you go back to Wigan saying that you want to go... thinking that Wigan are a bigger club, you got rocks in your head.
They're in the Championship next
they
season,
are.
Mate.
Good luck to them.
You know, might not be bigger in terms of... I mean, they won the FA Cup more recently than Portsmouth, though.
Yeah, Portsmouth beat them more recently than they beat us, though.
That doesn't matter.
It does. It always matters.
What, West Brom are bigger than Man United all of a sudden? That is the logic there, ladies and gentlemen.
And it seems fine to me.
After the break, we're going to talk a little bit about League Two. See you in a moment.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sig Thorsson.
Oh, my word. Sort of get you in touch for the summer. Yeah. Look, build up towards the summer.
I actually reacted to the goal like Marcus is now, because it was one of those points where I was like, this is the funniest thing England have ever done. At that point, I still thought we'd turn it around, but no.
At that point, you still thought it was some sort of avant-garde art installation.
Quite, yeah.
McClazza there.
Yeah.
Steve McClazza. Right, ladies and gentlemen, the preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Thursday. Luke, how did our best bettor get on this week?
He lost because he had Aubameyang to score first as part of an aspect of his bet, which of course didn't happen. Arsenal did win easily, but Aubameyang didn't do his bit. So sorry, Ed Gibson, we hardly knew ye.
Yeah. At least he had one.
To be fair.
It was annoying because I really wanted to use this.
But so we couldn't.
I have anyway. And incidentally, I don't sort of suggest we go back to this, but Joe Hart played well in that game.
He did.
And who's the other goalkeeper who played well?
Butland
played well as well, yeah.
So did Pope.
Two England keepers, there you go. Well, I'm just saying.
You're talking up Joe Hart?
No, I'm just saying he played well.
What's happening?
You hate Hart.
I was hammering him last week and I want to be even-handed about it.
All right.
Right. Is this so you can hammer him harder the next time he slips up?
I've heard he's been linked with a loan move to Portsmouth next season. Yeah. I'll take him.
He's more likely to go to Wigan, of course.
He is.
Bigger club.
Yeah.
More successful.
Yeah. Better fans.
Go on. Far away then. What have we got? We're going to need a new bettor, don't we, then?
We do, yeah, we do. So get in touch, show@thefootballramble.com with best bettor, bet365, and the subject line would be helpful, and we'll try and dig out a new winner on Thursday.
Absolutely.
We got Going for Gold on Thursday as well, don't forget.
Don't forget.
Oh, no, we won't, because Pete's not here.
Yeah.
What am I talking about? Sorry, guys.
Yeah, don't worry. Something we can look forward to when Pete returns.
It's a new feature, things we're not doing on the show.
Yeah. Well, Sam Blakely would only ruin Going for Gold anyway.
He would.
So
we should get Sam Blakely in.
We should do,
He'll come in and host
it. Explain himself.
First clue, Marcel Desailly.
Yeah.
We still get listeners saying, "Oh, I got it.
This guy is called Paolo M. No, that's too obvious. This guy's called P. Maldini.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, League Two. Luton will be joining Accrington Stanley in League One next season. Of course, Accrington went up last week, was it? They will play in the third tier for the first time since they reformed in 1968. But great for Luton as well. They're a bigger club than where they've been knocking around. Of course, they went out of the Football League. We remember that, which is a bit of a surprise. Mm. But I did like the stories around the promotion chat in League Two. Accrington player Scott Brown saying last week that during the celebrations, or after the celebrations, he'd lost his house keys, his car keys, and was still wearing his kit by the time he got home. I mean, no, my goodness. It must have been smelly, but
Worth it.
That's the smell of success, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sweat.
It is. It is, Marcus. And the only thing I was going to bring to the table is that the three teams in the top three positions in League Two, Acton, Stanley, Luton Town, Wickham Wanderers, of course, have all had their problems. And Wickham Wanderers have also been a non-league team for many a year. So good to see all those three on the comeback trail.
Great that Accrington will have a lovely day out of Portsmouth next year.
It is. Although Wickham haven't actually done it yet, by the way, I should point out. Yes. They've still got work to do.
Absolutely. But good to see Luton back in League One, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've been through the mill a little bit.
Do you remember the Mike Newell years?
I very much do.
How can we forget them? Should we speak about them? Probably not.
Uh-huh. What about his hat-trick in the Champions League? It was a quick one, wasn't it?
Don't forget that.
Yeah,
let's not forget that.
We'll end on that note on Mike Newell. Yeah. All right, Jimbo.
Because some of the other views he's got are questionable.
Yeah. Unless you're Mike Newell yourself.
Yeah, in which case you rationalise.
Weirdly
it,
fine with them.
Yeah. Unbelievable sympathy with Mike Newell.
Yeah, no.
Or perhaps not.
Where's that come from?
That was the Nigel Clathcroyd. There we are. Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time to go to our new feature, of course, our iconic England moments. Welcome to that feature brought to you by LG OLED TV. See it, hear it, feel it. Live the game with LG, proud sponsors of the FA and the England men's teams. Now, you may have heard last week, of course, ahead of the World Cup, we are reliving an iconic England moment every Monday is chosen by you, the listeners, with every chosen moment being entered into a competition to win a brand new LG TV. Ooh. The winner of the TV will be announced on the final show of this series feature on Monday, 4th of June. Last week, Michael Owen. We spoke about that moment. That was our moment.
We got the ball rolling, didn't we? The Michael Owen announcing himself on the world stage at World Cup 98. How could we forget it?
Against Argentina, of course. Yeah. This week, gentlemen, we have Stuart Pearce's redemption penalty against Spain in Euro 96, chosen by Alan Miles.
Well done, Alan. That's a great suggestion.
Big Al.
We have to say a lot of people suggested that, but we picked Alan's name out at random.
We certainly
did. No hatred, please. No beef.
You're absolutely right.
The most important thing is Stuart Pearce here.
We are talking about iconic England moments. There's not enough to go round each individually.
It is slim pickings.
But a good moment.
As ever with the Football Ramble, the most important thing here is not that, it's Stuart Pearce.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Alan said in his email, he said, it's not only his favourite England moment, but easily in his top five moments of his life.
Okay. Yeah. That says more about Alan than perhaps we knew.
Yeah.
Maybe he is an absolute bugger for a hard hit penalty.
It was important. It was a great moment, and I think maybe some of our younger listeners, perhaps who haven't really bothered to read around as much as we would assume they have, would say, "Well, Stuart Pearce, he was a good player. He scored the penalty. England actually won a penalty shootout, and all the rest of it." But that is part of it. But the big part of it is, of course, not only that he missed a decisive penalty in the World Cup semi-final in 1990, 6 years before, but the fact that England had some decent expectation at Euro 96.
Yeah. Oh, huge.
We're not talking about the
host nation.
Yeah, we're not talking about the era we're in now. We're talking about a situation where we actually did expect stuff.
Yeah.
And it was ramped up, for, as Marcus has just said, because England were at home. We had a brilliant team. If you look at that first 11 who played that game against Spain, it's a great team. I mean, there's not a player in there you think he wasn't a great player or he didn't go on to become a great player. And then also, just before that, we had just battered Holland 4-1.
Yeah.
So people were thinking, our name might be on this here. Mm-hmm. And for Stuart Pearce to step up, have a really personal moment, was absolutely massive.
And he also scored in the shootout against Germany in the semi-final.
And what was really interesting as well is, if you look back at the footage, you know, the moment it's known that it's going to penalties, Stuart Pearce lives up to the psycho nickname. He is going around just shouting in people's faces, getting them up for it.
Yeah, he is.
And he's going, I'm taking one. And I think now, because England have gone out on penalties so many times, it's perhaps easy to forget. Again, particularly maybe younger listeners don't really know, it was different then. If an England player missed a penalty then, they were vilified for just forevermore. And he'd been carrying that around for 6 years. And the way he hit that penalty, I'm surprised it didn't just explode the ball as he hit it with his foot. He hit it so hard. And that must have intimidated the Spanish team, because that celebration is one of the most raw emotional things that I think we've ever seen in sport.
Totally. I think in terms of a celebration, it's our Marco Tardelli.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, actually.
It's just pure raw. Obviously, didn't win us a trophy.
Well, that means that's the difference, but it's relative, though.
But I did say I isolated the celebration.
Yes.
I mean, on your point, Jim, about Stuart Pearce at the final whistle after extra time, going around and geeing everyone up, sometimes I think there is a tendency for us to sort of, not ridicule Stuart Pearce, but like take the mickey out of him a little bit because of what he's achieved since he finished playing his management career, and obviously we used to take the piss out of him a little bit. But you understand that he was the senior pro in that squad. I mean, he's 34, he's the oldest player. Tony Adams was the captain, of course.
Well, I mean, Seaman might have been older, would he?
No, Seaman, I think, was 32 at the time. Okay, Pierce was older. I mean,
yeah, you're absolutely right.
Pierce
yeah.
did play for a long time. I think he played till he was almost 40. So he was actually, by today's standards, quite old then. He was the senior pro. It was the right thing for him to do, to be going around trying to get everyone engaged and locked on for the challenge in front of him. And I think it was important because he's essentially saying to them, not only get your head on, focus, he's saying, I've been through this. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like. I know what it feels like. I've waited a long time to redeem myself here. But not only that, I want us to go through. That's the most important. And Stuart Pearce would say that. It's not about me. It's about the team going through.
That's right.
But of course, it was about him as well.
But also, Pearce was such a character. It was like England didn't have a left back. They had Stuart Pearce.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? His role on the pitch, and also his character, and the pure blood and thunder of the way he played was such a striking thing about England. And it was perfect to see that all distilled into that moment.
Mm. And I think it was only the second penalty shootout that England had ever competed in.
Right.
The first one, I think, was 1990.
Right. We thought we'd put it to bed, didn't we? We really did.
I mean, and obviously they then got beaten by the Germans in the semi-final, but it was a bit different, and as you rightly said, Jimmy, carried that round for them was 6 years, because it was such an odd one when England were eliminated from 1990 on penalties. So to get that sort of redemption, and then he did score against Germany. Now, obviously, England have had terrible times in penalty shootouts since then, but they did win that one. It was a rare thing. But what a player Stuart Pearce was for England, and few people. I know people. It can be a bit of an unhelpful chat when you talk about players caring. But my goodness, you could never question that man.
I think, and one of the things I remember from the tournament itself, just going back down memory lane, if I can, in an old Uncle Albert fashion, is that I remember watching the game, the England-Spain game, with a bunch of my friends from down my street. I was only 15. But when it came to extra time, I had worked myself up into a frenzy about the fact that it was golden goal.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been golden goal in the extra time period there. I think for the first time, possibly.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't handle it. I was like, I cannot deal with this. I didn't agree with the golden goal thing at the time. Yeah. I probably don't now either, and obviously we don't see it anymore. I had to take myself home. I was so nervous. I couldn't watch it with my mates, because the idea that as soon as someone scored, it was all over. Fine, it felt like it would be good if it was England who were going to score. But I don't know if you remember the game. The game was quite nip and tuck. Spain were quite a defensive team then.
Spain were probably unlucky. I think they had a good goal chalked off for offside in normal time.
They did, yeah. They did have one chalked off for offside. It took England a while to get cracking and find space. I mean, we had Gascoigne and McManaman on the pitch, and they started to find space after a while, but it was nip and tuck. Gascoigne actually said, Jim, just to echo what you said there, Pearce didn't give anyone any chance for debate. He just said, I'm taking one.
Venables said that. He came up to him and went, I'm number three.
Right, okay.
And he, I'm not going to argue with him.
No. You know? And it was a really big moment for Stuart Pearce. And I was also pleased that, I remember at the time, because I was a bit of a, as you can probably imagine, I was a complete nerd about football. And looking back on the 1990 miss, I was really annoyed with him because he didn't use his tried and trusty technique. Yeah. For those of you who don't remember, Stuart Pearce always used to drill the ball in the bottom right-hand corner of his left foot. That was like his penalty. And it's an unsavable penalty.
He was a good penalty taker.
He was, and he changed it for 1990. He tried to go down the middle and hit Bode, was it Bode Wildner? Hit his feet.
I think it was Wildner.
He goes back to his tried and trusty technique in 96, and he scores. And just to give more evidence to my claim that it's an unsavable penalty, the keeper knows what he's going to do, and the keeper goes the right way, and he still can't save it.
Zubizarreta in goal.
And it was, exactly right, and Zubizarreta. And just to reiterate how much of an important moment it probably was for Pearce as well, is that his autobiography, Psycho, which I own, has got that celebration image on the cover.
There you go.
So it's a massive moment for him too. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the Stuart Pearce's moment we're reliving ahead of the World Cup.
Nice
this
one,
summer.
Alan.
As he's walking off after the game, he's still shouting, come on, pumping his fist. He's got his top up as well, which is great to see. What better way to experience more England moments this summer if you aren't travelling to Russia, of course, than with an LG OLED TV and soundbar. And for your chance to win a new LG TV, just email into competition@thefootballramble.com and let us know your favourite England moment for that chance to win.
Yeah, well, Alan said he needs a new telly due to his three-year-old breaking his current one by deliberately nutting it during the recent Man City Spurs game because he wouldn't let him watch Blaze and the Monster Machines.
Well,
so his name's in the hat.
He's got to keep his fingers crossed.
He has indeed. Well, there's our latest moment, ladies and gentlemen, brought to you by LG OLED TV. See it, hear it, feel it, live the game with LG. Proud sponsors of the FA and the England men's teams. All this chat about international football is getting my World Cup juices flowing. And let me bring just a tiny bit more World Cup chat, if I may. We've got an Ibrahimovic World Cup update, gentlemen.
Oh, very good.
Sweden manager. Jana Anderson has spoken on this. He said, I don't know if Zlatan would still fit into the team, but if he wants to be a part of it, he must call me. Easy as that.
Oh, really?
So don't just try and talk to the manager through a Jimmy Kimmel, mate.
The door is ajar, though. It sounds to me like the door is ajar.
Well, he did say this, though, and this is a man after my own heart, if you wait for the final line. He said, to put it plainly, if you retire from the national team, like Zlatan did, following Euro 2016, the case is settled. I don't believe in convincing anyone. I'd rather work with the 250,000 players who want to be a part of it. Sounds like Sweden are going to have a big squad like England.
Are they using Speller Airways? Sounds like they're going to have to.
Get on board.
Yeah, great stuff. Yep. It sounds like the door's ajar.
Can I
just say as an addendum, one thing I forgot to say about Stuart Pearce is that he missed a penalty in the 94th minute of his final game against Portsmouth. And it was rumoured afterwards, Dave Besant was in goal for Portsmouth. That wasn't a rumour, that was actually happening.
Besant was a good penalty save.
It was rumoured afterwards that Besant said to him, if you just put it into the corner, I won't dive. And Stuart Pearce blazed it over the bar. It would have been his 100th professional goal.
Oh, right.
And he missed it.
Shame.
So there you go. There's a penalty addendum to the Stuart Pearce story.
There you are, you see. Well, ladies and gentlemen.
Will Stuart Pearce be in the squad in the summer?
He'll be on the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, he certainly won't be on the bench.
No, he'll be on a plane.
Yeah.
On the coaching plane, which is also massive, presumably.
Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble. It's been a pleasure having you with us. The preview show is out on Thursday. Of course, we look forward to that. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me as well. Barry Grintles.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.